Hello, Seven Oaks Church family and friends. Welcome here to those of you who are sitting in the building, joining our social distance gatherings. We're glad that you're with us today. And for those of you at home and are joining us online, we're glad to have you as well. We're in a series called Into the Wild, and we're looking at those moments and those stories in the scriptures, which are actually quite a lot, where people are in a physical sort of wilderness space, and some of the things that we can learn about that when we find ourselves, perhaps physically, but more so metaphorically, in a wilderness space in our own lives where things are kind of difficult and we're feeling a little bit exposed. And what are the things that we can learn during the time? And so we've been looking at that, and we're going to continue again this morning. In many ways, the medieval city or the village of the Dark Ages in Europe was a place of protection and refuge. Most of those cities and villages and so on had protective walls around them to protect the villagers or the inhabitants of the city from enemies. And usually standing at the very center of the city or the village was a towering cathedral or some kind of church building, perhaps a wooden church building if it was a little bit before the medieval period. And the message was that the walls are there to protect us from enemies, and the church is there to protect our souls from the devil. In the popular imagination, you see danger existed outside of the walls. In the wild spaces, the dark forests of Dark Ages Britain and Europe lurked all kinds of dangers. And at certain times, it was, you know, pagan soldiers that were out there camping in the forest ready to attack and pillage the city. And at all times, it was robbers and bandits and witches and warlocks and all those kind of things. And so the walls could keep you safe from attack, from enemies, and the church would keep you safe from demons and devils and all the spooks of the forest. The wilds was a place of danger, a place to be feared. In the modern world, in the 21st century, our cities are nothing like that. If you think of 21st century Canada, the cities are nothing like that at all. And in fact, there are whole businesses and industries that have developed around enabling us to experience the wild places of the country, the wilderness spaces of the country. If you think about guided trips and hunting and whitewater rafting and backcountry skiing and all those kind of things, the wild is an exciting place that captures the imagination. Yet still, the vast majority of us in this country live in a very close together in human-built urban centers. We live in homes that often have manicured lawns, and treated water is channeled safely into our homes. And, you know, we have all the things available to us in stores. We have food that is carefully packaged for us to feed ourselves. And there's medicines to help us when we're sick. And there's a police force to keep the order. And there's people to clean up the city around us. And all kinds of businesses that can produce and provide everything we might need to exist in this place. And so in many ways, there's no need to really leave these urban centers if we don't want to. And indeed, many of us spend months and months and months and months and years of our lives living within a few small kilometers, a few square kilometers in our cities. The vast majority of this country geographically, of course, has very few people living in it. Miles and miles and miles of wilderness that just seems to go on and on and on. The wild, the wilderness, is an exciting, alluring place. There is an untamed beauty out there. And there's endless opportunity for adventure and discovery. But although that's true, and although, as I said, there's businesses that are designed to help us experience the wild, nevertheless, there's still a danger in the wilderness, isn't there? Not least because we've been conditioned that everything is provided for us within a few square kilometers. Now, you could certainly argue, and rightly so, that there's way more dangers in the modern city than there is out in the wilderness. There's a lot more threats to us, and it's true. But there are all kinds of unpredictable elements out there. If we take ourselves away out into the wilderness, away from our sort of protective place where if something goes wrong, there's hospitals and there's medicine and there's people that can help us. If you take yourself out of that protective bubble, that protective place, and something happens in the wilderness, one wrong step on a hiking trip or a hunting trip, and all of a sudden you're calling search and rescue to come and pluck you out of the wilderness and put you back safely into the urban center. So even today, although the wild, although the wilderness can be alluring and exciting and full of discovery, it is still also foreboding and risky and full of danger. For the ancient Israelites, the wilderness was a place between Egypt and Canaan. It was a place between the time of slavery and the promised land. And we're going to look at a short few passages from one of those stories in a few moments. But it was a place where comforts were stripped away and everything was laid bare. And yes, Egypt was at times seen as a place of comfort despite it being a place of slavery. And we're going to see that in the passage that we read today, that there were times where the Israelites said to Moses, "We wish we could go back because it's hard here." It seems like they forgot the horrors of slavery for a moment and sort of remembered the good things and the beneficial things about them living in a country rather than out in the wild. They were looking to a place of familiarity. Even though the wilderness is free and we have our freedom, back there is familiar. And you know what? Many of us do that too. Many of us people, you know, leave a toxic relationship, but we'll go back to the toxic relationship because although it's toxic, it's familiar. And I know who I am there. And I know what to expect. The unknown, you see, can be terribly unnerving. Many people will stay in a job they hate because the alternative, the unknown, is too scary. And so the wild places of our lives can be foreboding and uncomfortable as well. And we can very quickly find ourselves in those kind of wilderness spaces in our lives, can't we? Sudden, unexpected changes like the loss of a job or the loss of a loved one, a crisis moment, a health challenge, a barren season in our spiritual walk, whatever it is, and we find ourselves unsettled and fearful and lonely and sad and disappointed. And I think we could safely say that the world has been thrust into a wilderness space of sorts with this pandemic, and there's been all kinds of different responses to that. Some people have responded with fear towards the virus, that they're fearful of contracting COVID-19. Others are not so fearful of the virus, but they're fearful of the future. What is the future going to look like now? When is this going to end? Will it ever go back to normal? What does a new normal look like, if indeed that's what we're headed towards? People experiencing loss and isolation, some respond with anger at how it's being handled. Some of us are suspicious, wondering if there's some kind of sort of malevolent plan that's being worked out underneath or around this pandemic. All kinds of different responses from different people. And we can spend our entire time complaining about our wilderness experience, whether it's the pandemic or something else that we're going through, much akin to the Israelites, or we can ask ourselves, what is God wanting to do in my life during this wilderness period? And we've been trying to talk about that through this series. And we've talked about how God sometimes leads us into the wild, like Jesus was led into the wilderness after his baptism. We've talked about some realities such as God's presence in the wilderness, how God can meet us profoundly in those times. We've talked about God's sovereignty over our wilderness experiences. We've also talked about the invitation into the wild that we sometimes find and how God provides refuge for us in the wild spaces that we find ourselves in. And today we're going to look at God's provision in the wilderness. So if you have a Bible with you, I'm going to encourage you to open to Exodus chapter 16, and we're going to read, I'm going to read to you a few verses. We're going to read verses 1 to 3 and then 9 to 12. The whole congregation of the Israelites set out from Elim, and Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai on the 15th day of the second month after they had departed from the land of Egypt. The whole congregation of the Israelites complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. The Israelites said to them, "If only we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots and ate our fill of bread, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Verse 9. Then Moses said to Aaron, "Say to the whole congregation of the Israelites, 'Draw near to the Lord, for he has heard your complaining.'" And as Aaron spoke to the whole congregation of the Israelites, they looked towards the wilderness, and the glory of the Lord appeared in the cloud. The Lord spoke to Moses and said, "I have heard the complaining of the Israelites. Say to them, 'At twilight you shall eat meat, and in the morning you shall have your fill of bread. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God.'" God's word to us today. The Exodus story is one of the most well-known stories in the entire Bible, and rightly so, because it's full of danger and it's full of daring escape. And we have, you know, one individual who dares to stand against the most powerful man in the world. And we have the story of this oppressed people who get liberated. It's a classic story of good overcoming evil. There are amazing, supernatural, miraculous events that happen at the center of this narrative. And so it's just a really, really good story. And then, of course, it becomes the defining moment in the birth of a new nation. It becomes part of the nation's self-understanding. So important that there's a national holiday to set up, that they set up in order to remember the past for future generations to remember and commemorate the Exodus. It's full of rich symbol. It gets recalled again and again in the Psalms. That's the songbook of Israel, as they recall the Exodus event and they use Exodus language. And it fuels hope for the future when the nation once again finds its sovereignty challenged and, in fact, outright taken away. During the exile period, the Exodus becomes like the carrion call for action in the present. The people once again groan and they look to God to perform a second Exodus on their behalf. And the people look to him and become hopeful as the prophets themselves use Exodus language to encourage them that God hasn't forgotten them and he will once again come to their aid. Following the Exodus, then, is this period of wilderness journeying. Escaping Egypt is one thing. Surviving the wild is another. To take a group of people that have had their lives ordered for them for generations and suddenly let them go free in the wilderness where they have to survive the desert is not going to be an easy thing. Moses had his work cut out for him as a leader. Their destination was Canaan, a land flowing with milk and honey, they'd been told, a place of rest and safety and abundance. But to get there, they would have to traverse harsh lands and wild spaces. It should have been a relatively short journey. Ended up taking 40 years because of distrust and disobedience. But that's a story for another day. In our passage, the people had arrived at the wilderness of Sin and they began to complain. "We're hungry and we need food. Even when we were back in Egypt, we used to sit around the campfire and chew on meat and eat bread and that kind of thing. And here, did you just bring us in the wilderness to kill us?" Part of the Israelite story during this time period was that God ended up growing tired of their continual complaining over and over and eventually their outright rebellion because they just never learned to trust. They had been witness to the amazing things that God had done, the miraculous parting of the Red Sea, the incredible miracles that he performed during the plagues and that kind of thing. They'd seen him act in such amazing ways. But when things got a bit tough, all of a sudden they didn't trust that the God who had revealed himself wasn't going to come through for them. That he'd bought them out for no reason. And before you and I get too lofty and kind of look down our nose at them and roll our eyes at them, we do exactly the same. How often do we find ourselves in a bind and we pray and ask God to help us? God answers our prayers in a great way, and then it's not long until we're back to complaining and not trusting and not exercising faith and belief, almost as though we have no evidence of God ever answering one of our prayers. Exhibit A over here. We do the same thing. Now, it's not as though we should expect that God will answer every one of our prayers in exactly the way we want him to, but part of discipleship, part of growing in faith, is learning to flex and develop and grow our faith muscles, our ability to trust him, to trust that his answer is best. God in his mercy is true to his word, and he does indeed take them towards the promised land. And he was never going to let them just die in the wilderness. And indeed, he does provide for them despite their complaining. But as well as providing for them, he tests them. He tells Moses that he's going to provide meat and bread for them, and he's going to drive quail into the camp. And each morning there's going to be bread from heaven, this kind of, as the morning dew lifts, there's going to be this flaky substance that kind of tastes like honey. The people are going to call it manna. It's kind of like wafers. But he gave instruction that they should only gather what they need for their family for that one day and no more. And if they were to keep some overnight, by the next morning, it's going to be moldy and full of worms. So they're only to collect enough for that day. Why is God doing that? Because he wants to see that even though he's providing for them, will they trust him for tomorrow? And will they trust him for the next day? And will they trust him for the day after? Except on the sixth day, when they're allowed to gather 2 days worth of manna, because on the seventh day, he's not going to provide any. And this is actually the first time a notion of Sabbath kind of gets worked out in terms of the praxis of the Israelites in their everyday life. And the provision for the seventh day, they keep it overnight from the sixth, won't go moldy by the morning. It'll be there for provision. So this is all about testing them. And it was a huge test for an agricultural people. Think about it. Any farmer knows that if you only gather and harvest enough just to feed your family for that day, you're not going to have enough year-round because there's no crop or no animal that produces every single day. So this is a test for an agricultural people. And it was a crazy economic expectation. How can you expect there to be enough if you tell us to not do anything one day in seven? It doesn't make sense, but that's part of the story. Sense actually lies in trusting that things will work out if we do what God says. This is the background to the New Testament's, give us today our daily bread. Lord, provide for us for what we need for today. Or seek first my kingdom and his righteousness, and all else will be given to you as well. Seek me, believe me, have faith in me, look to me, trust me, and all other things will be taken care of. And this isn't a health and wealth gospel kind of preaching piece. This isn't that. It doesn't mean that God will give us everything we want and everything we demand when we want it and when we demand it. But it does mean that God will be there with us in other wilderness experiences of our lives. And God will provide for us what we need, all operating, of course, under his sovereignty and according to his plan. Sometimes what we think we need isn't actually what we need. There's that too. Not all the Israelites got it right. Some saved them for the next day and it got moldy. Some got up on the Sabbath and went searching for the manna and didn't find any. So some of them weren't learning this key discipleship lesson. Will you trust me for today? Will you trust me for tomorrow? Will you trust me for the day after? Some of them still didn't get it. But God, in his mercy and because of his constancy, although they failed time and again, by his grace, he actually provided manna in the wilderness for 40 years. The Bible says it didn't actually run out. It didn't stop until they were settled in the promised land and didn't need it anymore. That's grace. That's undeserved mercy and favor, isn't it? I think I've told you this story before, church family, but I'll tell you it again because I think it fits very well with the message today. Years ago, when Renee, my wife, and I were leaving Victoria to move to Vancouver, I was going to study at Regent College to become a Christian leader, a pastor. We moved. We didn't know anybody in Vancouver. We were living there. And we had our oldest son was born in Victoria, so he was already 8 months old. And during our time at school, our second son was born, so we ended up being a family of four. And we'd saved a fair bit of money to be able to sort of pay for my tuition and that kind of thing, but we certainly didn't have enough to live on for 2.5 years, 3 years. And so I worked a couple of nights a week in a restaurant, and Renee ended up working one day a week as well as we kind of shifted kid care around, that kind of thing. But that was just to try to scrape rent together and pay for a little bit. We were going into the red every single month, hundreds of dollars into the red. And in fact, for a family of four, what we were earning each year was way below the poverty line in Canada for a family of four. And so it would have been very easy for us, as we were skimping and saving everywhere we could, it would have been very easy for us to say, you know what, we're not going to tithe during this time period because, after all, I'm doing something for God. I'm studying the Bible to become a pastor. I'm doing something for God. We won't tithe. We don't need to. But we were pretty committed to say, no, like, the way we understand the tithe is God gets the first fruits of our income. We're not going to skimp God. He gets the first 10%. We're going to give 10% away. I think it's 10%, maybe more. We're going to give 10% away of our income, and we're going to live off the rest, even if that means we're going deeply into the red every month, even more than if we weren't tithing. We were pretty committed to that. And I have to tell you, it was an amazing lesson for us. God provided for us in incredible ways. There were times we received unexpected gifts of money that we just came out of the blue. We didn't know it was coming. During our final year in Vancouver, our landlord came downstairs and gave us a letter and said, you know, this is just kind of indicating to you the rent change. And we knew rents were going up all across Vancouver, and we were expecting it. And we opened it up, and our landlord had put our rent down. Who does that? Who puts the rent down? He didn't have to. We never missed rent. We always paid it. We never missed a payday, but he put our rent down. You're good tenants, and we know you're at school, and we want to bless you. And then I arrived in Abbotsford, and our bank account pretty much got down to $0 the week or the period where I received my first pay packet here from Sevenoaks when I was hired here. It was an amazing lesson in God's provision for us. And I tell you that story, not to try to make us look good in any way, but just because it fits really well, and it reminded me of that manna story, that the manna lasted until they didn't need it anymore, and they were able to grow their own crops in the promised land. But I tell you that story because it just fits so well, but there have been many times in my life where I've been far less faithful, and in fact, downright faithless many times. But that was a great lesson for us. And so what I'd like to ask you as we kind of close today, the question I'd like to pose to you is, are you in a wilderness place in your own life today where you are finding it hard to trust God? And we all are to some degree, I think, but let me encourage you with the passage today. The demonstration of God's provision for you in your wild space. And it isn't just about food and money. I know my story was about finances, and I know that the story in the scriptures was about food. It was about manna. But it's not only those things. It can be many things. Maybe it's God's provision for your mental and emotional health during this time period because you're feeling isolated and alone. God's provision for your loneliness. It can be God's provision of his presence to comfort you during a time of mourning and distress and bereavement. There are many, many different ways in which God provides what we need. And my question for you is, do you trust him? Do you believe God will provide what you need, not necessarily what you want? For 40 years, God provided manna and quail, not steak and lobster. It's not always what we need. When he provides for you what you need for today, do you trust him to provide for tomorrow? And the next day. Or will we be back to square one complaining and being faithless? This is a growth and discipleship piece here. The people of Israel never actually entered the promised land because of unbelief. They never actually learned their lesson to trust. It was the next generation that entered. And so will you miss the promised land, and I'm not talking about a salvation thing here, but will you miss the promised land of the place of deeper connection and growth in God because you don't trust him to provide what you most desperately need? Will you miss out on that adventure of a deeper connection with Jesus and a deeper faith and a more wonderful and robust faith walk? Let me encourage you to turn to him today, to ask him for what you need and trust in his provision, in his time, and in his way. God bless you. Amen.